It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. Hello. You're tuned in to 2A Radio, the biggest, baddest, best, meanest, coolest Second Amendment dedicated radio show in the country, coast to coast and online. You can always stream at 2aradio.com. Matter of fact, all of the archives are available on the archives page at 2aradio.com. Additionally, you can always get a hold of me through my email address, which is bill@2aradio.com. 2A, not two-way. Some people confuse that as though there's a two-way radio. It's a one-way radio. I'm talking, you're listening. One way. It's two A's and Second Amendment. We don't talk just about the Second Amendment on this show. We talk about all of our rights. We talk about political corruption. We talk about different things that are going on in the country when it comes to guns and rights and, quite honestly, fighting back against tyrannical things that different government officials or, you know, the entire United States Congress might be doing, whatever it is. We talk about it. We talk about, you know, this healthcare overhaul wannabe. We talk about immigration, gun rights, First Amendment rights, and where a lot of people really misinterpret these things. For instance, rights are a guarantee between you and your government. That's what is a right is a guarantee to. It's not a right between you and somebody else. If you want to walk into my house and start talking about some sort of a political diatribe that just comes forth, I can tell you, you know what, not in my house. I can subvert your First Amendment right to freedom of speech in my house. Who cannot do that is a government official. As well, who cannot do that is a place of a public accommodation. Like, let's say, your favorite supercenter, where you can go in for groceries or your a new belt or pair of shoes. You can't just go into any private establishment that has restrictions on who can come in and come out and do whatever you want with your rights. However, a public accommodation, the open streets, or a business which is open to the general public, that sort of thing, well, those folks really cannot subvert your rights, which is commonly something that happens with only your Second Amendment rights. You may go into a grocery store, which is open to anybody that wants to go in there and spend money. And if you carry a gun, they might say, oh, we don't want you to carry a gun in here. They're now subverting your Second Amendment right. Would they be able to tell you you can't go on your political diatribe in this store? No, they cannot. They'd be violating your rights. That's been proven in many, many court cases, so they don't do it anymore. But yet they're still willing to say you can't bring your gun in here to protect yourself? Okay, you're taking away my right, my inalienable God-given right to self-protection, guaranteed in the Constitution and upheld by the Supreme Court more than once to carry this gun for self-protection. You're telling me I can't do it? Well, then you better provide me a suitable substitute. These are the types of things we talk about here on 2A Radio. All right? So, we've got a hell of a show coming at you today. So, stay tuned. We've got plenty coming. If you'd like to send me any emails or comments on the show, please do. Bill@2aradio.com. We'll be right back right after these words. Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back. Welcome back from the break, everyone. I have to tell you, it's been a little bit crazy around the Carnes household as of late. For starters, my ex-wife, my first wife, she is an American citizen, and several years ago met an Australian guy and moved to Australia. They were married, had a son. Their marriage ended up coming to an end a couple years back. So my ex-wife lives in Australia by choice. She lived in Germany for a little while. She was going to move back to the U.S., decided, you know, I'm going to go back to Australia. I love it. Anyhow, she's in Australia with her son. He's 8 years old, and he suffers from a severe case of autism. So that means he operates as though about 16, 17, 18 months old as an 8.5-year-old boy. Cute as a button, too. He's just got an extreme case of autism. So they live in Australia alone together. And my daughter, our daughter, who's 20 years old, was just back there for 2 months the first part of the summer. Basically spent June and July there. She's been back for a month, and about 10 days ago, her mother, Mike's wife, ended up having a life-threatening medical emergency, to which she did survive, but she is still in the hospital today from this. She had a close friend of hers able to take a week off of work and take care of her son, care for her son, while my daughter and I did our best to scramble to find her a way back to Australia, which was none too easy of a task. Getting back to Australia is rather expensive. Luckily, a family member stepped up and helped out with that quite a bit, and a couple other family members stepped up and helped out with getting her a few bucks to be able to spend and take care of her little brother while she's there. So she ends up flying back to Australia, put her on a plane. She got there over the weekend. And my daughter, she was living in Las Vegas for a year or so with some friends, had an apartment on the east side of town, and she ended up adopting herself a cat, and who's a brat. The cat has a lot of personality. It's a total brat. And then she was in, where was it? I think Arkansas, visiting her mother's mother, her grandma on her mother's side, and her uncle, her mother's brother. And I guess on the street that they live on, there was this little Pomeranian walking around that looked absolutely disheveled, evidently been living on the street without a family. So my daughter decides to adopt a dog, take it in off the street. And this is Pomeranian's actually fairly old, 12, 13 years old. So now she's living in her apartment. This is, you know, many months ago, with her little Pomeranian and her cat. Well, then when it's time for her to go to Australia, she brings the cat and the dog over to my house, and ends up that my second ex-wife in Arizona ends up watching the cat for the summer, and I end up watching the dog because she couldn't find anybody to watch a dog. Well, that dog decided to use the interior of my house as its own private toilet, which made me none too excited. I found someone else to watch the dog for the rest of the time she was gone. So she comes back, back comes the cat, back comes the dog. In the immediate instance of needing to leave and go back to Australia again to help out her mom and take care of her little brother in Australia, I am now with the dog and the cat once again. I already have my own dog, and then we adopted a puppy about 4 or 5 weeks ago, a little Labrador puppy. And he's probably 12 or 13 weeks old now and getting big. I mean, this dog's 27 pounds and about 12 or 13 weeks old. When we got him, he was probably 16 pounds. He is just growing. Almost by the day, you can see the increase in size. And just flopping around, a little uncoordinated, and just kind of out of his mind. Well, 2 weeks ago, my girlfriend, she travels for work. She usually is gone for a week at a time. Well, this time she's gone for 2 weeks. I pick her up last night, and we get back to the house about 8:30. And since last night, now keep in mind, at the 2 weeks she was gone, the puppy peed in the house a grand total of 3 times in 2 weeks. All 3 times because I hadn't let him out within, you know, 5 or 6 hours. So I can partially blame that on me. He just wasn't able to hold it that long. Now, if I crate train them, and it's not actually a crate, it's an open top. It's actually these, it's probably about a 3-foot by 3-foot area that I have them in. I have two of these, one in the bedroom where we sleep, and then one out in the living room area over the tile floor. So if I'm going to be gone for a few hours, I don't want to stick them out in the heat. I'll put him in this pen. It's like a little baby playpen of sorts without a floor. And he's good in there because he's not going to, you know, he's not going to take a pee on the floor when he has to be there. So he'll hold it longer. However, when he's out, then he will. So my girlfriend's been back since last night at 8:30. That puppy has peed in the house 3 times in less than 12 hours. And I got to tell you, I am a really kind of a one animal kind of guy. So we have our rescue dog that we got about, I don't know, almost a year and a half ago now. We have the puppy that we've had for about a month. And then we have my daughter's little puppy and her cat. I am not a 3-dog-and-1-cat kind of guy. It just doesn't work out. So I told my girlfriend, I said, we're in the midst of digging 3 holes and about to be a 1-dog family again. I've about had it with all of this. My daughter was not able to secure anybody to watch either her animal, so she leaves it with me to take care of. And it's interesting because my dogs don't... My oldest dog gets along with her tiny little Pomeranian, but the puppy, this Pomeranian weighs all of about 3 or 4 pounds. And the 27-pound puppy likes to play with the little cute little Pomeranian who's 12 or 13 years old and is about to kill it just by flopping around on it. So that's not a good situation. And then my adult dog, my adult rescue dog, is looks at my daughter's cat like it's her next meal. So just we got to keep them separated. They're tearing up the room they're in. It's just I am absolutely not happy. I have been a non-animal owner for many years because I just don't like animals tearing up my house. I don't buy a house. I don't move into a house. I don't live in a house. So I can take care of animals and repair the problems that they create. I absolutely am not a fan of that. So now I'm dealing with all of this. My girlfriend comes home, and I'm thinking, okay, good. It'll be nice. You know, she'll be able to help out a little bit. And no, it just ends up creating more problems where the puppy decides, oh, I'm going to have some behavioral issues, and I'm going to start peeing on the floor right in front of you. Okay. Yeah, so now I have to deal with this. On top of all of that, my girlfriend gets home last night, and she's not feeling that well. So not feeling that well, she's in bed, and throughout the night, flopping around like somebody dropped her 2 feet from above the mattress and thump, 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 flopping around. And, of course, when you flop around, what happens to the covers? Well, they usually don't migrate towards the other person. They usually come away from them. So flopping around, making noises and grunts and just not feeling good and feeling like garbage and getting up and, you know, going to the bathroom or going out in the living room and then coming back and grunting and groaning and flopping. And it was like some sort of a bad joke on me. It was like living in a bad joke. So very unrestful evening. And then, of course, whenever she gets up, if I'm in bed, I mean, I go to bed, I stay in bed for 8 hours, however long I'm in bed, 7, 8 hours, 9 hours, however long I have to sleep, I don't get up until it's time to get up. So when I'm not moving around, the puppy, who can't see me because he's at the foot of the bed off to the side in his little playpen of an area, doesn't make any noise. Whenever she gets up and gets moving, of course, he's awake and alert and starts making noise and scratching at the side of the pen and getting up there and whining. And it was just a long night, and it has been it's nice to have my woman home, but it's been a rather unpleasant last 12 hours around the house, I have to tell you what. So we'll be done with the show today, and I will go back home, and we're going to go to the store because whenever I go grocery shopping without her, there ends up being some sort of an issue or another, so we will go grocery shopping together. Since she's been gone for 2 weeks, the house is rather empty, so we have a large grocery and utility store run to go on today. And it will be nice for she and I to be able to get out and do this without any animal-related distractions. Until we get home and start putting things away, we'll have to work on that. Anyhow, so it has been a very interesting time at the Carnes household since last night. I am very happy to have my woman home after 2 weeks. I certainly hope she's feeling better tonight. I really do. And I also hope that we can get the behavioral issue with the puppy handled, because he keeps peeing on my floor. He and I are going to have a man-to-man discussion. So, stay tuned, guys. There is plenty more to come on today's show. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're tuned in right here on 2-8 Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back from the break, everybody. I want to talk to you a little bit about these NFA trusts we've been putting together. We've been doing several of them over the last few weeks, and things have been going very well. A lot of people don't seem to understand what an NFA trust is, so I wanted to break it down. If you want to own an NFA item, now that means something that's Class 2 or Class 3. That would be short-barreled rifle, short-barreled shotgun, or what most people get them for, a submachine gun, machine gun, or suppressor. Now keep in mind, these the machine guns and submachine guns need to be manufactured prior to May 19th, 1986, to be legal for an individual to own them. The normal process is three background checks, extra paperwork, fingerprints, photographs, things like that. You have to, first of all, what you do is you end up finding somebody who's selling an item. You pay, let's say that you're going to buy an Uzi submachine gun, right? You find somebody who's selling a pre-86 Uzi submachine gun. You pay them for it. And that Uzi submachine gun, they send to a Class 3 dealer who then, in their area, wherever it is, and then they send it to a Class 3 dealer that you find in your region, near where you live. You owned it, you paid for it, but you cannot possess it. The Class 3 dealer holds on to it. All right? That's the way it works. Then, what you do is you write up a letter requesting permission from either your police chief, if you live in a city, or the county sheriff, if you live outside of the city limits, asking them if a mother may I, are you okay with me owning this? You then submit it. They run a background check on you. They respond, provided they respond with, okay, we're good with it. Now, keep in mind, if it's okay in your state, you still have to get their permission, all right? Then you have to get a couple of passport photos, a couple of fingerprint cards. You got to fill out all of the forms with all the background information, and you send everything in duplicate and a check or money order for $200. It goes to the ATF. They have three different workstations. One workstation is all of the paperwork here and filled out correctly? If the answer to that is yes, they cash your check or money order, they deposit that. Then they send the pile of paperwork that you sent off to the background section, bottom of the pile. Once it reaches the top of the pile, they do another background check on you. Now keep in mind that the police chief or sheriff will do a background check on you when you first submit the letter. Then they do another background check at ATF. Then after the background check is done, then they submit it to the approval section, the approval department goes to the bottom of the list. Once it gets to the top, They go through, make sure that the paperwork was in order, make sure the background went through, look at all the approval, then they create the actual tax stamp and tax stamp form, and then they send that off to you. Then, when you get that, you can go retrieve your Class 3 item. In this case, we're talking about an Uzi submachine gun. So, three different... Oh, and then when you go pick up that Uzi submachine gun, they do yet another background check on you. So, three background checks. Now, if you do an NFA trust, you eliminate the letter to the police chief or sheriff. You eliminate the photographs and the fingerprints. You're still paying $200. You're still sending in the other forms. But you can eliminate all of that. So when it goes to ATF, they look through the, okay, is everything here pile? Yes. All right, it's a trust. Okay, then we can eliminate the background check. So it goes directly to the approval pile, which goes much faster. Now we're eliminating several weeks off of this process. You can get, without any sort of, just going as an individual, without a trust or anything, your approval process will take between 2 and 6 months. Well, between 3 and 6 months. If you go with an NFA trust, it's usually 6 to 8 weeks is when you'll get this information back. So then they send everything back to you. Now, keep in mind, your sheriff or police chief doesn't know that you're buying this Uzi or suppressor, whatever it is. We'll keep to the Uzi right now for keeping things streamlined. They don't have a record of it. So they don't know to keep you under their watchful eye or put your cross-reference your driver's license or license plate number, put something in their computer. So to warn the cops that, you know, you own a submachine gun, none of that is known. And everything is fine because it's legal in the state. Then the ATF doesn't go through their secondary background check. So you get all the approval paperwork. Then when you go to pick up the item, then they do the background check, the exact same background check that the police chief or sheriff would have done and the ATF would have done. But now it's just done through the instant Brady check, the system that you've got at your local Class 3 gun dealer. Then you get to pick the gun up. So not everybody in the world knows that you've got this gun. And you didn't have to waste the extra time doing the extra background checks. All right? How about that? How nifty is that? On top of that, with the trust, right now, as an individual, you cannot loan or let out of your possession any Class 3 items, Class 2 or 3 items at all, period. However, if you have a trust and you have others on as trustees, be it family members, close friends, whatever, and they're all on the same trust as trustees, they then can go out and use these things as well. So you get together as a group, this guy buys this gun, this guy buys that gun, these guys buy those suppressors, and voila, what do you have? You have a group of people that can actually share equipment if you're all on the same trust and you agree on a storage area. And it works out that well. And I set these things up. Oftentimes you'll wait 6 to 8 weeks to get one from an attorney and pay $1,500 to $3,000. I can have you trust in a week for $500. So if you're interested, shoot me an email. Either info@BillCarnes.com or Bill@2aradio.com. Folks, there's more to come after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host right here on 2A Radio.
Listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Somebody get a silencer for this guy. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. Now, I actually had an interesting email over the weekend about gear. What sort of gear to keep in a gun bag. Came from a guy who's a mechanic and obviously likes to have all the right tools around. So, and it's interesting, you said, I do understand that you say that you're not a gear guy, but what can you do? Let me qualify that. When I say that I'm not much of a gear guy, that means I don't keep up to date with every new whiz-bang gun or optic that comes out on the market. I just don't. I don't have the time, the patience, the interest in reading every issue of every new gun magazine that talks about the latest, greatest whiz-bang gun that's coming out. I don't have an interest in that. What I do have an interest in is being able to grab whichever gun it is that you've got and being able to use that effectively and efficiently in a defensive situation. That's my interest. So people ask me about the latest Yokohama 9mm, you know, Shibato Model 48 283.9, you know, Special Forces Edition, compensated flash suppressed pocket pistol. I could give a damn less. I'm not into it. But I do want to make sure I have all the right gear at home that I can put into my range bag and take with me when I go shooting. So I have to also pre-qualify this. I have two different range bag setups. One when I'm an instructor, and one if I'm just going out to shoot. Because I don't need to have all of the excess gear when I'm an instructor. When I'm an instructor, I take out enough gear and bits and pieces and tools and things like that to work on several different types of guns, just in case somebody has a problem with something. I carry out extra magazines, extra holsters, extra magazine pouches for guns I might not even have with me in case somebody else's gear fails. It's always good to have backup. Like, when I go out, if I'm going to take my 1911, I'm going to go out and go shooting, I always have at least one extra 1911 holster on me, if not two. And I will have more magazine pouches than I need and quite a few more magazines than what I'll actually be carrying in case any of my gear fails. If I go out with a Glock, I'll do the same thing. I will have an extra Glock holster. I'll have a couple of Glock magazine pouches with me, a couple of extra magazines. That's just the way I roll. If not having an extra Glock and or an extra 1911, which is a very common practice, I usually carry more than one gun. Or let's say I'm going to carry a 1911, I might have a Glock as a backup, or vice versa. Because those are my main guns that I carry, Glocks and 1911s. It's just what I own, what I carry, what I use. So if you're going to have a range bag set up for you when you go to the range, and you want to have the right stuff, first of all, you have to look at your gun and see what it's got. All right. If you've got a Glock, all you need is a punch, like a Glock armor's tool. And I forget the size of the punch. It's like a 5/32 or something like that. That's all you really need to have. However, what is nice to have is a small flathead screwdriver, as in the head is small. The length of the actual shaft on that screwdriver is probably going to be about 2.5 or 3 inches, made of a good solid metal material with a good handle that's not just going to snap off. Just don't go get, you know, something cheap. Get a decent 3-inch long small-headed flathead screwdriver. Keep that with you. Another thing which is nice is a set of needle-nose pliers that have a rather thin and narrow long head on them. Those are nice to have as well. All right. You can, if you're not an official certified Glock armor, you can see what official certified Glock armor does if you get a video called The Complete Glock. I had that video, The Complete Glock, a couple of years before I ever became a certified Glock factory armor. And The Complete Glock, there's only one thing that I learned in the armors course that I didn't learn off of that, and that was a simpler way to actually get a pin in. And that's the pin that actually holds the slide stop lever in it. If you lift that up a little bit as you're wiggling that pin in and out, and you're playing with the height, how high up you actually have that slide stop lever, that makes it a little easier to get that pin in and out. That was the only thing I learned in the Glock Armors course by the factory that I didn't in the video available called The Complete Glock. So just 2 cents worth of that information. So if you own a Glock, that's really all you need to take with you. Of course, with every gun that you've got, my suggestion is this. You need to have at least something to help with cleaning it and at least something to help with lubing it in case you need it. All right? Because a lot of times people just grab their bag, grab their gear, and they go. They don't inspect their gear before they leave and go to the range. I'm not that guy. I inspect my own gear before I go to the range. I make sure it's good to go. If I don't have time to inspect my gear before I go to the range, I usually just plain don't go to the range because I don't want to go there and be frustrated dealing with gear issues rather than shooting. A good friend of mine actually owns a trash can, and this trash can is full of literally several hundred GI 1911 magazines. Hundreds of them. Now, they're not the fancy whiz-bang Wilson Combat magazines or the, you know, the ones that you can get from Trip Research. He doesn't have a bunch of fancy ones. They're just old mil-spec 1911 magazines. If he's going to go to the range and shoot a 1911, he will grab a whole bunch of those magazines, throw them into a box, go into his living room, and while he's sitting down watching TV, he'll load dozens and dozens, if not over 100 of these magazines, with ammo. Because when he goes to the range, he wants to shoot, not reload magazines. I can understand that. I don't want to fix guns. So you want to just have what you need to do that. What I keep with me to get all this back on track, as I've digressed, is I like to have an item made by Uncle Mike's called a boar snake. Now, a boar snake that has a long string on it, and then it is a cotton and nylon sort of a thicker piece that actually has a brush in it. You can drop that from the chamber, you know, open the slide on a semi-auto, drop it from the chamber in through out going out the muzzle, grab onto it and pull it through, and it will do a quick cleaning of the barrel. Now, what a lot of people will do, which is very incorrect, is spray some sort of a cleanser into the barrel and then run this boar snake through when the barrel is wet with some sort of a gun cleaning solvent. Don't do that. That's not the design of it. If it needs to be cleaned with solvent, then you spray it with solvent, use a brush, then you would push some sort of patch or patches through there to get the solvent out, and then use a boar snake to finish it off. The boar snake is equivalent to about 40 gun patches. You can also get them for rifles and shotguns. Whatever gun you've got, whatever caliber gun you've got, get a boar snake or two, and just take those with you. Another thing I keep is one of those Teflon or silicone impregnated gun and reel cloths. I keep that. So if a gun is just not working, it's a little dirty, I can actually take that cloth and just wipe down the rails. Take the gun apart, field strip it, if you will, and just kind of wipe everything down the outside of the barrel, the inside of the slide, around the connecting areas of the frame, down through the magazine well if that's dirty, around the outside of the magazine on the magazine's follower if I need to. I can just wipe everything down with this cloth. It'll clean it up and offer a little hint of lubrication on it. Then I can reassemble the gun. It's going to work okay. I also keep a needle oiler. It's a small bottle that holds about 2 ounces of oil that has a needle oiler on it, literally. It's a needle tip that has a little cap on top. And I put my favorite gun oil in there. My favorite gun oil in the world that I use is made by Lucas. Now, Lucas Oil, you see them, they advertise on the Speed Channel and things. They make things for your transmission, your crankshaft, for all kinds of automotive purposes. They also make Lucas Gun Oil, which is fantastic. I have used all kinds of gun oils in the past. This is fantastic. Another one which I really like, and the guy sent me some copies of it, or some copies of some samples of it, is called, it's by a guy, he calls himself Midnight Rider, and it is called, what is the name? I will remember it. I just started using it a few months ago. It's actually got 13% liquefied pig fat in it, and it works really well, and he's actually sold it to a lot of different combat troops that go over to the sandbox. Because you know how the whole thing works out, where if there's any sort of swine on or in you, you're not going to Allah's paradise. It is called Silver Bullet Gun Oil. That's what it is. And that stuff works incredibly well. Very good. So, Silver Bullet Gun Oil, you can go online and check that out. Lucas Gun Oil, you can go online and check that out. Oftentimes, I've just found where they're selling automotive products, and they keep the gun oil with. If they sell the Lucas oil and you want to get that, but they don't have the gun oil, ask them next time they place an order to order in the gun oil so you can get some. Comes in like a, 4, 5, 6 ounce bottle. I put it in a 1 or 2 ounce needle oiler. I also will keep one of these syringe style lithium grease injectors with me as well. Wilson Combat makes one. I think Eagle Industries makes one. A lot of different companies make these specifically for guns, high temp lithium grease. If it's warm out and it's good conditions, I like to use a little bit of grease rather than oil. If it's a colder environment, I like to use oil instead of grease just because of the viscosity difference. That's the way I like to do it. Another tip on lubing your guns. Many people just simply over-lube them. It's real simple. If you live in a dry environment, like I live in a very dry environment, if it's 8% humidity, that's a wet day. It's incredibly dry here. So if you live in a dry environment, you run a much drier gun. You don't use very much lubrication on a gun in an environment like this. If you live in a wet environment or a wet and cold environment, you will use a lot more lubrication. And a lot of that is to not just make the gun work, but to protect the surfaces. Now, I own one of my 1911s is stainless steel. I worked in Alaska a few summers back for 3 weeks. I come back, and I actually had surface rust coming on my stainless steel 1911. A little bit of surface rust going on. So I had to clean all of that off. So realize, and that's because I didn't put extra oil on the outside of the gun. That was my own fault. I knew better, but, you know, hey, stainless steel doesn't rust, right? Wrong. It just rusts and corrodes a lot more slowly. I did not take my carbon steel slide 1911. It's got a titanium frame, but a carbon steel slide. I specifically did not take that because I knew it would be susceptible to rust. My Glock that I took up there with me came out just fine. I had a Model 20 10mm Glock. I didn't even really shoot the 1911 much. I shot the 10mm Glock and carried it a whole lot more. It actually put up with the environment, the wetter, much more moist environment up in Alaska. So there you go. So if you're going to carry a 1911 or something else that takes up other tools, carry a decent set of varied size punches. That comes in, you know, like a little packet of sorts, you know, like one of those little fold-out plastic packets. Carry a set of those smaller screwdrivers, like the jeweler-style screwdrivers, that would be Phillips head and flathead. You never know what you're going to need. And also a good multi-tool setup that is full of Allen wrenches, like the Allen wrench packet that comes out and everything folds out into one big tool. That is pretty essential as well. And then always carry an extra pair of safety glasses, even if they're just those large, broad, industrial-style safety glasses that you can get at your local hardware store for $3 or $4. They're made of polycarbonate. You need to have polycarbonate lenses. They resist impact. They're shatter-resistant. Carry those. And then a lot of times people will have the big earmuffs to use for hearing protection, which are great. But keep those little roll-up foamy earplugs with you as well, because you can carry a bunch of them. And if you misplace your earmuffs or something like that, you've got these as a backup. Always keep a few of those sets in there. And keep in mind, if you've got the ear protection, the big headphone ear protection, and they're big, when you try to mount a long gun, a rifle, shotgun, submachine gun, something like that, when you bring it up and mount it properly, you're going to push that big, fat earmuff up off of your firing side ear if you get a proper cheek weld. So try to get the lower profile ones or the ones that have kind of an angled cutout off the bottom of the outside of the ear that cut out and then wrap up. If you have some ear protection that actually one side cuts off and goes up at an angle, that's the side you wear on your firing side. So if you're right-handed, you shoot right-handed, you'd have that angled side on your right side, left-handed on the other side. So that's the way you'd work that. So there is basic essential gear. Always remember the gun. Always remember the ammo, holster, mag pouch, however you're going to work it out. Bore snake, Teflon or silicone impregnated rod and reel cloth. You might want to also keep a small little spray bottle of gun cleaner with you, and maybe a little brush setup. If you like. Otherwise, have your gear ready to go when you go to the range so you don't have to deal with that stuff. Keep a little bit of lubrication with you. That's the way things will go. Now,
American dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on, we'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Welcome back from the break. Now, if you're going to be going to the range and doing shooting with a rifle, you need to figure out whatever tools you might need for that. Have a bore snake appropriate for your rifle. I have spoken before on cleaning a rifle, the proper way to clean a rifle. I'm going to hit that again. I'll probably do that show again on Friday on proper way to clean a rifle. Because when a lot of people talk about, you know, eroding your rifle, you shoot the throat out or shoot out the barrel, things like that, it has almost nothing to do with shooting. Almost nothing. You have to have a very, very hot caliber. We're talking, you know, 3,700 feet per second, beyond 4,000 foot per second round, loaded right into the chamber, and shoot thousands of these things before you really start noticing some sort of throat erosion. Most of us are not in that ilk. And then to handle the throat erosion, you take the barrel off, you have the back of the barrel cut down, the breech of the barrel cut down just a little bit, have it rechambered, put it back onto the gun, you got the same barrel. All right, that's an easy way of handling it. But to actually shoot out the barrel and the rifling, the way that that happens, guys, is improper care, improper cleaning, and improper storage of a gun. So, being as how we've got hunting season coming up right around the corner, we're going to talk about proper care, proper cleaning. I've also got a booklet that I am finishing up. I've tried for the longest time to get a buddy of mine who's a photographer to take pictures of actually demonstrating some of these things, and it just hasn't worked out. I mean, we've been trying to get together on this for better part of 2 years, and suffice it to say that I've just not been able to get the photographs done. So I might just put this out in a Word format, and I'll have this available, and this is really absolutely top-notch proper care, proper cleaning, proper storage of your guns, of your long rifles. Now, it's designed around for a precision rifle. However, because so much care and effort goes into precision rifle keeping incredible accuracy, if you do it on your guns that are not precision rifles, you're certainly not going to harm them. You're going to keep them in wonderful shape. So, we will probably get to that again on Friday's show. I would imagine is probably when we will insert that later this week. And I will try to get that little booklet together on how to clean a precision rifle, cleaning, care, storage together. So those of you who are interested can pick a copy up. So that really kind of sums up today's show. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not-